Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
I am recording!
Hallelujah. 3, 2... You know, I don't make that kind of announcement when I hit record. You know,
let's just say. I
know, I'm just saying.
You're just recording. We don't even know.
I know. It's pretty darn awesome.
Yeah, you're a creepy recorder.
Oh, you have no idea. You have no idea. And I hope other people never find that out. Since we are recording. And hello, everyone. This is Earth Station 1. Yes, we are back. And we are going to a galaxy far, far away. And we are going to be looking at the 40th anniversary of Star Wars. That's right, folks. We are diving into the world that George Lucas built for us. And can you believe 40 years? And, you know, some of us are, you know, I wasn't even around then. And then there's people like Mike and I, and we were already in elementary school and, you know, ready for, you know, looking forward to this. You know, this was like filling a void that was missing in our lives before that. It was empty before that. You could almost imagine that. And speaking of that, the man I just mentioned, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
So are you ready to feel old and talk about Star Wars 40th
anniversary? Well, you know, it's weird. It's like on the one hand, when I realized that it came out 40 years ago, it does make me feel old because that's a long time ago, man, in a galaxy far, far away. But it also, you know, whenever I think about Star Wars, it makes me feel young again because when I watch it, it brings back all those feelings. But it really is an invigorating movie. It's an invigorating piece of work. I get excited I'm sure, you know, I'll be excited when we discuss it later. And I've been discussing it for 40 years now. I never get tired of it. It's a subject that who knew that something could happen, you know, that like a piece of art, you know, like a movie that would affect me so much. I mean, there are other movies that have come and gone since then, obviously, and a lot of them have been great. And Star Wars isn't my, you know, if someone asks me, puts a gun to my head and said, what's your favorite movie of all time? It's not Star Wars, but Star Wars is probably second.
Really? What would be your first?
My first one is Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Okay, so another George Lucas film.
So George is still a big part of that. So, and you know, you could argue that without Star Wars, Raiders doesn't get made. So, so the Star Wars has a big effect, and you know, we're going to get all into it, I'm sure, with some great guests and all that. So, I don't want to talk too much about it now, but I'm excited. This is like it's Star Wars. I feel like a kid.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And we do got a great crew to talk all about it this week. Of course, we want to also hear from you guys at home. Please write us esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Of course, the show is brought to you by the fine folks at the esoamazon.com store, where you can find all kinds of neat stuff, even possibly some Star Wars stuff. Who would have thought that, you know? But if you don't want to go to the Amazon store, you could also go to ESOpodcast.com. And right at the top there, you have the choice of the Amazon store. But we also have a link directly to Amazon now. And if you click on that link, or if you go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon, it'll take you to Amazon.com. And it doesn't cost you anything extra. We don't charge you extra to shop there. It's all the actual Amazon prices, but we just get a little smidgen of what you purchase. Ooh. And you, smidgen. You've heard of that word. Yeah. A smidgen is worth more than the value of what you get in the geek seat half the time.
A smidgen sounds a lot like twice my pay.
Pay? You?
Is that what that's a smidgen sounds like? Yeah, it's like I get half a smidgen. That's my pay.
Mike, you get paid with this file of Metachlorians I have right here for you.
Wow, he spoke the M word.
Exactly. So we definitely, you know, love to have you guys support us. You guys have been great at supporting us in the past, and please continue. We really appreciate it. It helps keep the wheels running here at the station, and, you know, it just maybe helps Mike get a smidgen more of pay. You never know. You never know. So with that being said, let's take a jump into our rants and raves, and we got some bad news to start the rants and raves this week, actually.
We do, and, you know, I mean, it's, this one came out of nowhere and is very tragic, and I hate to start, you know, such an exciting show, a celebratory show, with something like this, but I think it has to be mentioned, and for a couple of reasons. One, Chris Cornell died last week, apparently he took his own life. So that's something that, you know, definitely is an issue that I think needs to be addressed, as well as, I can't say that I'm the biggest Soundgarden or Chris Cornell fan, but I will say that I've seen Chris perform. It was a solo show. I don't even remember him having a band. I think it was just him and a guitar. Although it was a very stripped down version of the show. He was out on his own promoting his solo album. And I think out of, you know, all of the grunge folks, I think he had the best voice. I do have a couple of Soundgarden albums. I think he worked with Audioslave. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
I have one of those, or I think I have two of those. I haven't heard them. I haven't listened to them that much, but I do love his Chris's solo work. I can't say that he was one of those artists like, you know, that affected me like Bowie or Prince, but yet I did really enjoy his performances, and it's a lot of the front men from that grunge era are no longer with us now, and it's just I hate to make him out to be like, oh, just another one, but it's kind of staggering when you look at, you know, Andrew Wood and Kurt Cobain and Layne Staley and Scott Whelan, like they're all gone, and it's just very, very, very strange. And it sort of came out of nowhere. But then when you add it with all that, it just seems like this weird sort of thing. And, obviously, we don't know what kind of personal demons that he had. I don't know if we'll ever know. I'm sure there'll be some sort of, you know, investigation, as far as formal investigation, as well as, you know, there'll be documentaries and things written and that kind of thing. So I'm sure, you know, stuff will come out later. But, you know, as we've seen all too many times, just because you are a celebrity and have a lot of money and seemingly everything at your fingertips, you don't have everything.
No, that also shows that money a lot of times does not buy happiness, that you still have issues, and you replace one issue for with another, basically. And that's the sad part about it. You know, I've met Chris. I didn't know him personally. I've met him when I was living in Seattle. Seattle, when I was living there, was not a big city like it is now. And a lot of people, especially in the music industry, knew each other. And we all, you know, socialized with some of the same people, or we went to the same bars, or we went to see the same kind of music. And, you know, when I moved to Seattle, you know, the only band at the time that really had broken big from the grunge era, of course, was Nirvana. Pearl Jam was the next up. And, you know, items like that than Alice in Chains. But everybody knew each other. Everybody knew who these people were. They weren't, you know, it was, you knew them by their first name. You didn't know, oh, that's Kurt Cobain. It was Kurt. You knew Eddie. You knew, you know, Lane. You knew, you know, Chris. And you just, you knew the people. You knew some of the side projects they were working on. You knew the side bands that they were playing with, or that they were playing at the Crocodile, or they were playing at, you know, up on Capitol Hill. You knew where these places were, or the warehouse. You know, it just, everywhere you knew, you know, you would see them on the streets and you would just do it. And for me, it was just, Chris was always seemed like he had a good head on his shoulders, and it took me by surprise. The way I, you know, when he, at first they said he died, and, you know, oh my God, he's 52 years old. That's too young to die, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, oh, you know, then 2 days later they came out that saying he had committed suicide by hanging himself. And it was just like, what? You know, at first I thought it was, you know, something like what happened with Michael Hutchins, you know, some kind of sex thing or, you know, something like that. But it was, he was a straight up suicide, you know, supposedly. And it just, it, that actually really bothered me. And, you know, these are people, you know, you don't, you realize you might think you know somebody and think they're a great person, but, you know, they, everyone has their demons, you know, and that's some of the sad stuff about it. You know, we're going to, you know, lift the lid here a little bit. And, you know, a couple weeks ago on the Dragon Con report, we talked about suicide quite a bit. I talked about it with Michelle, and it was just, it's heartbreaking. You know, when anybody takes their own lives, you know, no matter what, there's something to live for. You know, if something bad is going to be released, you know, somebody's going to really be releasing some bad news, that's something you did or you were trying to hide, or, you know, or someone broke up with you, or, you know, you have financial issues, or you have a disease or something. There's always tomorrow. You always have to remember that. And there's always ways to get around it. And, you know, we've talked about the National Suicide Prevention Hotline multiple times on this show, you know, not just the segment with Michelle. And there is always somebody to listen to you. It could be, you know, that's what's great about geekdom. There's always somebody to talk to. There's, you know, that's why I always feel like with Dragon Con, I go home when I go to Dragon Con. It's my family reunion, not just the people I meet with, the podcasters and such that I do ESO with, but also my friends. I only see them once a year or so. And it just always feels like, you know, there are always a lot of times, there's times when you are down and stuff, you could just hop on IM or talk on somebody on Facebook or in a chat room or something. Somebody's going to be there to listen. And that's what's great about the National Suicide Prevention Hotline, that, you know, there is somebody to listen. If that, you know, I think, you know, if you ever have any doubts, please always, you know, talk to somebody. Don't keep it in. Don't, you know, store it in. You know, you might feel like, I don't have any friends, I don't have anyone to turn to. There is somebody always to listen. That's the great thing about it.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, for what it's worth, I mean, you know, we here at Earth Station One, you know, I will say that, you know, I'd be glad to, like, if anybody needs anything, like anybody needs somebody to talk to, anybody's feeling like that, on the one hand, I have no problem saying, you know, send me a message, call me. I will gladly, you know, help in any way I can. However, I will also give this caveat. I'm not accustomed or equipped to deal with a lot of things. So, I cannot guarantee that, you know, I will be an ear to listen to, but the help that people need, I mean, the people at the suicide prevention line, like, they know their shit, right? They know, like, what to do and what to say and how to address things in a way that they don't patronize. They don't make it sound like it's your fault. They don't victimize. They understand, and they're there for you. That's exactly what they're supposed to be. You know, they're there for you. So if you think that nobody's there for you, there is a prevention line, people that are there for you, and they can help you with whatever you're going through, as well as the steps you need to take for the, to get out of, you know, the mess that you're in. So we'll have a link on our show notes. But
and
for
the
those people who are just listening to it, you know, the phone number, it's 800-273-8255.
And it's a 24-hour line, and there's always somebody available there.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, it just – the problems that you have – look, I mean, if celebrities – and we've seen – the reason that we've talked so much about it is because it's affected us as geeks, as friends, celebrities, as people that we're fans of. I mean, it's not something that just like certain people
do. I was going to say, Mike, we're not celebrities. No, don't ever get that in here. No. We're not talking about us.
No, absolutely. But, you know, I mean, I've known friends that have done it. You know, I've known celebrities that have done it. You know, I mean, it's in this social media world, we're all connected in ways that we haven't ever been before. And with that connection, you know, I think it's important to use that connection. So that we don't feel alone. I mean, the some of the things, you know, we all started out when I watched Star Wars all those years ago and we were geeks and we thought we were the only ones. Well, we weren't, you know, we weren't. We just weren't around everybody else. And, you know, like I said, I'm not the best when it comes to, like, expressions and words and all that kind of stuff. So definitely talk to people who really know what they're doing.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, the good thing and the plus and minuses with social media, sometimes you feel closer with people because of it. Sometimes you feel a lot more distant from people because you don't get the social interaction like you used to. Yeah, you could talk to somebody on an instant message, or you could talk to them, you know, even now you could talk to them over Skype or, you know, with I am on your Facebook or, you know, for the younger people, you know, Snapchat, you know. So it's just there are people there, but, you know, it sometimes feels hollow and lonely, and I could understand that. And, you know, I've been there. I do – both Mike and I do understand what you're talking about. Yeah. So, you know, definitely there are other options. You don't have to end it. Really do not.
And so it's really unfortunate. I mean, it's unfortunate that Chris is no longer with us. I mean, he was, you know, he had a great voice. He was a influential musician. You know, he did a Bond movie soundtrack. I mean, how cool is that, right? And so much other stuff. And he was, you know, around a lot of folks that, you know, aren't around anymore, you know, and so, but even with that knowledge, he had his demons. And I know that, you know, he's hopefully in a better place now and that his demons are not there. But, it's a tough thing. And, you know, we're all grieving because of it.
Yeah, the one joke I've been hearing about this is now, all right, everyone keep a 24-hour watch on Eddie Vedder.
Yeah, it's very strange, you know. And it's weird because, you know, like, look, it's just very strange. And that's a whole other thing. So, yeah, so it didn't really, you know, obviously – we have more exciting and more fun stuff to talk about, but I do feel it's important to acknowledge not only the passing of a great voice and songwriter, but also the fact that, you know, the reasons or the manner in which he left us doesn't need to happen to everybody. And let's move on and talk about some fun stuff and enjoy life and celebrate things.
Exactly. Let's give that phone number one more time, Mike, just for people out there.
Yeah, the phone number is it's a toll-free line. It's 800. And I'm acting like people are actually writing it down. But that's because I'm stalling while I bring it up.
1-800-273-8255.
Yes, I just got it just then. 800, yes, right. 273-8255. So, and yes, we'll have links to it on our show notes as well. So
So definitely let's take a break and we'll be back in a moment. In my eyes.
Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's What to Watch. It was actually a quieter than expected weekend at the box office over the Memorial Day holiday, with some of the new releases not performing quite as strongly as analysts had predicted. But the box office could get a shot of adrenaline this week thanks to the much-anticipated Wonder Woman. This is going to be an important movie for several reasons. The first is mainly that Warner Brothers and DC Comics really needs this one to be a success. Now, they've had some financial success with their past DC Cinematic Universe films with Batman vs. Superman and Suicide Squad, but these films have taken a lot of flack from critics and even from some fans, and they haven't been as successful as they could have been, I think because they've had some issues with the plot and too much going on. These films sometimes feel a little bit rushed, like they haven't fully formed their cinematic universe in the same way that Marvel has formatted theirs. So DC is really going to need Wonder Woman to be a good movie if they want to have that strong push into Justice League this fall. But it's also important just because this is one of our first superhero films that stars a female superhero, and it's just going to be great if this is a wonderful film that parents can take their daughters to see a great superhero role model. The previews are looking great. I love that they're setting it in World War I. It looks super exciting. Hopefully, we'll be able to bring back a good report next week about Wonder Woman being a great film. Well, next up, we do have another new film coming out at the box office. We have the animated comedy Captain Underpants. You may remember the comic book series from a couple years ago about these two kids who find out that their school principal has a secret. Under special circumstances, he turns into a superhero called, you guessed it, Captain Underpants. I really don't have any idea what to expect from this one. Concept is, of course, a little silly, but, you know, we haven't had a whole lot of maybe necessarily movies targeted just to kids this year. School's out and parents are going to be looking for something fun to do with the family, so we'll have to see how it turns out. If you're looking for a way to stay inside and beat the heat, we have several new films coming out on DVD. We have the dramas called The Shack and Before I Fall. We also have the comedy Fist Fight. Well, that's it for this week. Be sure to tune in next week. We're going to talk about the reboot for Tom Cruise's The Mummy.
We are the Metal Geeks Podcast, and on this show, we have heavy metal, comic books, video games, movies, theme parks, and more.
Wait, comics?
Yep.
And movies?
Exactly.
Video games?
Yeah.
Metal?
Of course.
How does theme parks fit in this?
It just does. All of us Metal Geeks can be found at metalgeeks.net.
At Metal Geeks for Twitter,
Metal Geeks on Instagram,
and Metal Geeks on the Facey Space. You can also find us on iTunes. Subscribe today.
Metal Geeks.
Folks, we are going to go for a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And yes, 40 years ago is a long, long way now. And in some ways, it just feels like yesterday that we are going to be talking all about Star Wars, what it's meant to us, what it's been like. It almost goes into what we were talking about a couple weeks ago on this show when we did what we learned from Star Trek, and then also on Earth Station Who, where we everything we've learned from Doctor Who. I think Star Wars has pretty much shaped a lot of people's lives in so many different ways, shaped a lot of the technologies we're using now, shaped our lives. And, you know, everyone, you know, in some ways, Star Wars is very universal and, you know, shaped geekdom beyond what anyone could have ever imagined, you know, what George Lucas could have even come up with. So we got a great crew to talk all about that. And, you know, let's, of course, welcome our movie guy and gal. First, Mr. Alex Autry.
Oh, thank you, sir.
And, of course, Ashley Pauls is with us.
Yay.
Hello. Thanks for having me back.
After a brief sabbatical, she is back and in form again, folks. She has a voice.
Yes, it's nice to actually be able to speak again.
Well, it was neat to hear you sound a little froggy, almost like one of the aliens in Star Wars.
And bring out my deep voice there.
Exactly. It was the husky. you were going, use the force. I want this movie. So, and of course, we're joined from one of our listeners, a very good friend of the show, Jim Griffin. Welcome.
Thanks. Great to be back on the show. It's been a couple of years, so really happy to talk about one of my favorite subjects, Star Wars.
Well, exactly. Even your meme on Facebook is pretty much, you know, James Bond holding a lightsaber. You know, what more does it say? If you ever think of any kind of glowing sword, you have Star Wars to thank for that. So basically, you know, what was everyone's early involvement with Star Wars? I know Ashley wasn't around yet, so...
not quite.
Yeah,
I do have a question for Ashley though. Did you watch A New Hope first?
I did not actually. I watched Empire Strikes Back, which I know is not what you're supposed to do, but
it's interesting. I find that interesting. I found that interesting when talking to people about Alien and Aliens. A lot of people that are not from, you know, my generation or whatever have watched Aliens before they saw Alien. Mm-hmm. So I wondered if that was the same thing with Star Wars. And yes, you've proven that for some folks it certainly is.
I ended up watching them kind of out of order, but of course I loved Empire so much I went back and watched all the movies. But and that one ended up being my favorite, so maybe it was a good one to start with after all.
Yeah.
But Ashley, you know, since you are younger than us, what drew you to the Star Wars?
Well, I'm trying to think of what kind of first connected me. I, you know, kind of grew up hearing about the characters and, you know, seeing the lightsaber battles that looked cool as a kid. But I think what really drew me in and kept me coming back was the characters. There's just so many great, fun characters. Luke, Han, Yoda. It's this big action adventure, but it also has a really deep, like, emotional core, too. There's some pretty powerful storytelling, even though on the surface level, it's kind of this sci-fi space opera. And so that's really kind of what drew me in and has kept me coming back year after year through some good times and some not so good times in the franchise, which I'm sure we'll get into. But yeah, it was definitely the characters that really pulled me in and made me fall in love with this franchise.
Awesome. What about the rest of you guys? What drew you to Star Wars?
The commercials. I was five.
Really?
And I was five when the first Star Wars came out. So it's weird because like I remember everything about my first trip to Star Wars. I can tell you that it was raining. I could tell you what theater I went to, everything. It was just kind of amazing because as a child, I lived near the North 85 drive-in. And so it wasn't uncommon for us to go to one of their double features, and I'd be asleep 20 minutes into the first film because I was sitting in the back seat of a car. And for Star Wars, you know, we went and saw it in a legit theater, and it may have been my first time going to a non-drive-in theater. And to sit down and the lights dim, and all of a sudden, you know, you've got, you know, that Star Wars and big bold letters on the screen, and then the storyline crawl. It really kind of grabbed you, and of course that first scene with the ships in pursuit of each other, it grabbed me right then, and it's never let go.
Awesome. What about you, Mikey?
Completely opposite. I was not turned on by the ads at all. I was 8, 9, right? And for some reason, I can distinctly remember seeing the ads. And I can distinctly remember the advertisements with Luke and Leia swinging across the Death Star bridge there. And some of the other imagery. But I guess I couldn't, because nothing had ever come out like that before, maybe I just couldn't process it. I think that's what it is, what it was. I couldn't process it. I just couldn't grasp what this was. And I do remember my parents saw it first. They saw it with some friends of theirs around, I don't know, sometime over the summer. And they came back when they came back home the next day or whatever. They said to us, I remember that distinctly, they said to me and my sister, you guys should go see this. So at some point in August, I'm pretty sure it must have been around August that I saw it, August of 77 when I first saw it. They actually sort of escorted us to the theater, but they didn't see it with us. They sort of left myself and my sister to see it in the theater. They got our tickets, they escorted us into the theater, and then they kind of said, bye, you're on your own, right? And my sister is about 3 years younger than I am, and she has a very, well, at that point, she had a very, very tiny bladder. She kept having to be excused to go to the bathroom, and I had to escort her to the bathroom and back to her seat every time. So I think it probably was only maybe three times tops. It felt like to me it was 100. So I got bits and pieces of Star Wars the first time I saw it. I didn't really get to see the whole thing. There were certain images that stuck with me. For some strange reason, one of the images that has stuck with me more than any during that first viewing was a stormtrooper on a dewback. I don't know why, because it only is on the screen for like 2 seconds.
It's just there, and then they move on.
But I guess I just was, attracted by like, ooh, lizard, big lizard.
But that was one of the publicity stills, though, that they had was of the big lizard with the stormtrooper.
After that, I read the book. I went and saw it again with some friends. This was around 78. So, and I was much more into it then. And Star Wars, I think in almost every sense that you can think of, both personally and worldwide, industry-wide, so many ways, it's a game changer. It was a game changer, and in some ways, it still is. I mean, it really changed everything. So much of the world and my life. And I'll just leave it like at that. But it was a bumpy start. I mean, I wish I had that memory that Alex has and so many other Star Wars fans have, where I remember clearly my first time and it was great and I got excited and I did this. But really, I just remember more escorting. But the people in the same row as us must have been really pissed off, because we kept having to go like, excuse me, and then, back again. And it was just ridiculous. So, Unfortunately, my first time watching Star Wars was not – it was memorable, but not in the way that I would like.
Gotcha. What about you, Jim?
I'm a lot like Alex. I was five when the movie came out, and it's the first film that I remember going to see. It may have been the first film that my parents took me to see, but we went to the local drive-in. It was summertime. It had been out for a while, and the first time the blockade runner, and you could probably, I guess, gauge somebody's level of Star Wars fanaticism by, do they say, is it Princess Leia's ship, or is it the blockade runner, or is it a Corellian Corvette? Those are the conversations I remember having as I got older and I could learn more about these things. From that point on, I was at the front of my parents' car just watching as every new scene unfurled, and there was some new amazing visual image or some new character was introduced. And I remember the car driving home and, my face pressed up against a window the entire time trying to see, well, there's stars up in the sky and I'm looking at the stars right now and it's dark. So maybe I could see an X-wing flying by or see a Y-wing, because, I'll be the odd guy out. I always liked the Y-wing better than the X-wing.
Oh, the Y-wing was boss. I'm there with you, Jim.
That's my first memory of the film. So I had that kind of the stereotypical dream Star Wars fan, experience. It's the first film I remember seeing. And I think as Mike said earlier, I mean, it kind of grabbed me and, hasn't really let go since then. And I say that as I was, don't have the Greedo costume yet, but as I was putting the X-Wing costume back into the closet post renovation, I'm like, yeah, I'm 45 and finally got my X-Wing costume done. Yes.
Achievement unlocked. Very nice. Mike, what about
you? That is awesome. Actually, I saw it probably within the first month. I remember seeing it up at White Flint Mall up in Maryland and, you know, going to go see it. Everyone had been talking about it. But I remember, you know, the true comic geek in me wanted to go see it because I had picked up issue one of Marvel Comics, yes, adaptation of it. And I devoured it. And I literally, I collected the comics at the time, you know, from that point on, the full Marvel run that they originally did.
I did too.
And it was just, it was awesome. And, you know, looking at it, because it was what, Carmine Infantino doing the artwork for it in the interiors. But it was still when Carmine wasn't as sketchy as he got later and blocky. And it just looked beautiful. And it was just so much fun. And I remember seeing it in the theaters and comparing it to the comic book. It was just like
– you're like, where's Jabba?
Exactly.
I was about to ask.
Where's the yellow guy?
Because in the comic book, they still had the Jabba sequence. Yeah. And I think the comic book also had the conversations between Luke and Biggs on Tatooine.
Yeah, they did.
Yes.
Yeah, they did.
And it was a very different looking Jabba, more humanoid and
quite thin.
Not a slug at all.
It
was Diet Jabba.
Diet Jabba. Jabba Light.
Jabba Zero. Yeah, there we go.
All right.
But it was awesome to see. And, you know, my sister had, of course, you know, my sister's 3 years younger than me. And so she had to be a 6 at the time because I was 9 when the movie came out. And, you know, she had heard, you know, about this heavy breather they had in the movie. You know, there's the bad guy, he's a heavy breather. And she stood up in the frippin' movie theater and yelled at the top of her lungs when he saw Darth Vader, Michael, it's the heavy breather. It's the heavy breather. And I was like, and of course, being 9, you try to sink as far into the seats as humanly possible. So it was great. And, you know, ever since, you know, I've been hooked. And, you know, Star Wars was one of those movies that stayed at the movie theaters forever, mm-hmm, too. You know, the original Star Wars, I remember the theater in Gaithersburg where I grew up, literally showing it for the 74th week in a row, Star Wars, you know. And yeah, they were advertising that they've been showing it that long. And people were still going to go see it.
Oh, yeah.
The newspaper ads, I remember, because you could, you know, on Fridays and Saturdays, you'd open up the paper and you'd have the big movies always had the eighth of a page ad almost with their poster. And at the bottom of it, it would say, you know, 60th straight week and things like that, which was just amazing. Because, you know, it's ridiculous. Here, Ashley's going right now going, you couldn't download it by then? it was, you know, the only way to see Star Wars was to see it on the big screen. And it just stayed at the theater. It was like that one and Close Encounters and Smokey and the Bandit that year. Were your tentpole movies, and they just stayed at the theater for the duration of the year.
Things were so different then. I mean, it's been 40 years, but man, you know, Mike, you were saying it feels like in some ways it was just like yesterday. No, it feels like it was 100 years ago. Like it feels like in some ways it just feels like, because there's so much that has changed. And, you know, Star Wars is one of the reasons that a lot of things has changed.
Mm-hmm.
But that initial viewing, I'm kind of interested to see what, like, you know, like obviously the first viewing that I had, I took the dewback, right? And for some reason. But as I, you know, got more and more involved with it, you know, because there wasn't straight to video, there wasn't the internet, there wasn't anything like that. So, you know, we had the comics, we had the novelization, we had promo cards, we had newspaper photos, we clipped and grabbed anything that we could to hold on to Star Wars while, you know, while we could still see it in theaters. And then after it was gone, we just sort of, you know, the action figures, everything. That's that we could still have a part of it with us. I'm kind of curious as to which characters that you, I mean, obviously, you know, there's the ones that are supposed to be stay with you. But if anybody, you know, I mean, I think for me, it was hard not to be impressed with Darth Vader as the biggest, baddest villain that I had ever seen in my entire life. And this is before he could slaughter a hallway full of rebels, right? This is just when he stood there and barked orders. He still was the most frightening villain that I think I'd ever seen at that point.
Oh, yeah. He definitely popped Obi-Wan Kenobi.
You know, you say that, and yet, really, in the first Star Wars movie, the true main villain in that was Tarkin.
Sure, sure.
And but, you know, he was pulling the strings on. I mean, he had control
right.
over Vader. So,
yeah, for me,
that
like,
was
Vader's his henchman, right? Vader's yeah. his like his odd job, right? I mean, that's
Vader didn't become unhinged until Empire.
Right. That's
and that was the moment where, you know, you're just seeing him, you know, casually killing his own men because they've disappointed him.
Well, exactly. No, that's true, because he almost felt like a Bond side villain.
Yeah, he did. He was Jaws. He was Odd Job. he was good at it.
But he's not even – and really, I mean, he's not even that impressive if you look at him. Like, back – if you look back on him now, right, he's much more impressive in the other movies. And certainly the other movies have lightsaber battles that are more impressive. But yet that first viewing of Star Wars, I mean, it was he was everything.
Vader was
everywhere. I think Vader was – probably, I think, the biggest character to come out of that. I mean, obviously, the others did, too. But, man, Vader was just everywhere.
We joked earlier about Darth Vader and is a heavy breathing. But actually, that is, I think, one of the things that makes him so iconic. Like, when he comes on screen, he just immediately has a presence. I think your eye is just drawn to him. The mask is kind of scary and intriguing. Mm-hmm. We wonder what's going on behind the mask. Why is he like this? And I think the other films just really take advantage of this and grow his character and then actually kind of deepen him. We find out that, oh, he's Luke's father. And then in the end where he turns good at the last minute. So I think he's just actually my all-time favorite movie villain because he's really scary. He works as just a villain, but they deepen that and they make him a more interesting character by giving him some layers. So that's one of the things I appreciate about the Star Wars franchise, just some of the layers they give these characters.
Yeah.
And building on what you said earlier about Tarkin really being the main villain, I think Star Wars really, better than just about any other film, gets kind of, I call it like the villain pyramid right. You introduce the stormtroopers who, you know, the first thing you see is they conduct a successful opposed boarding. They knock and beat all these guys, the rebel fleet troopers ahead of them. They win a battle, and then Darth Vader shows up, and these guys all defer to him. They step out of his way. They bow their heads. They take their orders from him. And then when you introduce Tarkin, Vader defers to him. So you have this, you know, escalating scale of competent bad guys deferring to the next guy up, and then the next guy up demonstrates, whether it's Vader, you know, casually picking up a, you know, a rebel and choking the life out of him, or Tarkin, you know, being snarky and then saying, oh, and by the way, I'm going to blow up your planet to make a point. You never have, I think, the mistake a lot of other films make where the villains are introduced in a comedic way or they're shown to, you know, not having, you know, they're involved in something that goes awry at the beginning. So you're automatically undercutting the villain. Star Wars does this great job of introducing, you know, scary, imposing villains and then bringing in somebody that villain defers to. So they're, you know, demonstrating they're even worse. It's great.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it.
I mean, obviously, you know, a lot's been said about, you know, what Lucas took, appropriated, you know, used as
tools, stole,
whatever, stole, you know, whatever choice you want to use, right? But I mean, obviously, I think he got the actual, you know, he used the tools right, and he got the hero and villain dynamic absolutely right. I mean,
oh yeah,
I mean, like, I'm amazed to this day when I see, you know, a movie and it's a hero villain type struggle and the villain is just weak. And I'm like, come on, you have to, like, the villain I think is almost as important, if not more important than getting the hero right. But Star Wars got both of them right. I think in terms of, I mean, the heroes were great too. I mean, I think Luke, even though we look back on him now, as being really whiny, I certainly could relate to him.
Oh, sure. And he was almost like a kid our age, just a little bit older.
And I got to say, I don't know. Well, Alex, you were there. When they recently at Celebration did a 40th anniversary panel,
yes,
Lucas came out and talked about the first movie in a way that I don't recall him ever mentioning this before. I mean, certainly the elements are there, but I never heard him kind of straight up and say this. And he actually said, quote, "I wasn't supposed to say this, and mm-hmm. I wasn't supposed to say this then, but Star Wars is a film for 12-year-olds.
I was making a movie for 12-year-olds, yeah.
And he said this is a coming-of-age film with themes explored to help those at the on the edge of adulthood. He said, quote, "It's about friendships, honesty, trust, doing the right thing, living on the light side and avoiding the dark side." And that's sort of the first time I've heard him mention that specifically. I mean, obviously, we know the history of him working on the epic that was going to be, you know, like, and which chapter he would pick of it and all that kind of stuff. Like, we've seen rough drafts. So obviously, as a coming of age film, it wasn't always established that way. But certainly when he broke down and told this story and decided that if he was going to tell anything related to Star Wars, this was the story he was going to get to tell. Because there was no guarantee that he would be able to tell anything else. And so he decided that at its heart, he would make it a coming-of-age film, which I think definitely was the right call, because it worked for me.
A lot's been talked about you know, how everything was set up, and I think it was Variety that pointed out that, you know, when Star Wars first came out, there was no chapter. And it wasn't until it was re-released,
right,
in 78, I think, that they had the suddenly chapter 4, A New Hope. And, that was the first time he tweaked it, and something that he should have stopped right there on. But anyway, I digress.
It's actually not the first time he tweaked it, but for all intents and purposes, yes.
For all intents and purposes.
But wasn't that also at that time, I know he had already started talking about that it was going to be three series of threes.
I've heard that. I've never actually seen anything to indicate that. From what I've read through Variety, Chapter 4 came about because it was the fourth screenplay writing.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Yes. Now, it's possible that the first screenplay was this big, gigantic thing. And we all know the story of Luke Starkiller, whose name actually, thankfully, they didn't mention Luke's last name through most of the film because they started filming him as Luke Starkiller. It's you know, he put in a lot of little tweaks and everything that were kind of Hollywood insider jokes in a movie that had really had not been done before. You'd had space films before, like the TV series and whatnot. But I'm trying to think of the I know the one of the mics will go this one. Spaceship Outer Space with all the plants and the two robots that walk around.
Silent Running.
Thank you. Which, of course, you know, Lucas
Rooster
got sued.
Man.
Yeah, and Lucas got sued because of R2, because it's basically the same characters. But you had this dystopian society, and if it was a science fiction film up until 77. Your future was bleak. And along came Star Wars that kind of said, yeah, this is science fiction, but it's also Errol Flynn. It's the great World War II fighter pilots. It's your traditional samurai, and it's a Western. So, all set in outer space. And that was really cool and different. And I think that's part of its charm, or all of its charm. I don't know. I know it was good for me. So, I had a direction. I lost it somewhere. I'm sorry.
For me, it was the first movie, because I was 9, 10 when it came out and such, that actually had so much merchandise with it. Mm-hmm. You know, it was all the merchandising. They had the action figures. They had the cards, you know, the bubblegum cards.
Bubblegum cards with the blue surrounding on them with the piece of nasty plastic.
Exactly. It was the blue one.
The horrible gum. Yeah,
the first wave was blue.
Blue, then it was red, and then green.
And there was yellow in there, too.
There was a yellow in there, too.
That was yellow also. But, yeah, I remember I had all of – well, a ton of them. And trying to find and drive my parents nuts trying to go up to 7-Eleven to try to get a new pack over every week or something so I can collect more Star Wars cards. And then if there was doubles, trying to trade them. And it was just – and then you had the comic books. Mm-hmm. And once they got past to the end of the movie, they came up with original stories with the same characters, which were awesome stuff. They had a giant 6-foot green rabbit in it.
That was not one of their better ideas.
I love Jackson.
Jackson ruled.
Yeah, man.
And you guys are all right to be wrong. Now, I have to ask, especially since most of us were old enough to collect them. Sorry, Ashley.
Thanks.
What was your first action figure?
I think that mine was either Luke or Obi-Wan because it had the – it was when they had the lightsaber coming out of his arm.
I have Luke, Obi-Wan, and Darth Vader all with the lightsabers coming out of their arms. So, yeah. So I must have had I think I got him as a – I didn't get the first set, but I think I must have gotten more than one at the same – yeah, I'm at the same time because – I still have them. I still have all my figures from then.
Oh, I envy you. I played with mine, so mine are all destroyed.
I did not blow mine up, so.
I have what's left of mine. No guns, though. There's not a single cannon.
Yeah, I got a few guns missing and some arms are missing and, you know, that happens with Jedis.
Oh, yeah, it happens all the time. But I remember getting because I had Vader and I also had the TIE fighter with the wings up popped off.
Yeah.
So I, you know, and it was just like, and finally the spring broke on the wings, and it just had to fly it around without the wings on it.
No, my very first one, I'll never forget this. I don't know why I remember it, but I'll never forget it. I had a whole bunch of Fisher Price dolls. They weren't action figures; they were dolls. They like drove around in a van or something like that, and a Chewbacca. And Chewbacca. It was like, you know, Adventure Dave and Chewbacca. and Chewbacca was my first my first action figure. And it was a big deal. And I mean, later on, you know, obviously, you know, got the land speeder, got the X-Wing fighter. Never had a TIE fighter. I had those and the Millennium Falcon and all of the figures. I got as many as I could. But yeah, my first one was Chewbacca, and I loved it.
Here's a question I have for the group. Okay, so yeah, so we all saw it when we were very, 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 very young. I'm curious to know over the years, in subsequent viewings, and with all the history that's gone on, good, bad, ugly, with Star Wars and everything else, with all the other blockbusters, movies that you've seen, everything else that's happened since then, like where do you place Star Wars now as far as like, do you view it differently than you did then? Like, is it a different experience for you guys? Like, how has it changed? Start with you, Jim.
It is tough to say how much it's changed, because it's kind of, since it's always been there. I remember seeing just come through my Facebook feed the other day, it was a screen capture from some Starlog magazine from like 85, and asked the question, "Is Star Wars fandom dead?" And I thought, well, boy, you got that question wrong if you said yes. I mean, you look at it now, especially, watching other films and learning how films are made and everything. You can see some of the holes in the plot, that the speed at which it runs, you don't think about, you don't notice. Even when they were obvious, when they're acknowledged in the script, when Princess Leia turns to Han and says, "They're tracking us, so you still go back to Yavin 4. Why would you do that?" I have more of that perspective of time. I can see the flaws, but I don't care. They don't bother me at all. Right. That's probably the only thing that's I think really changed. I mean, I can appreciate now more what an amazing film it really had to be in 1977. Like Alex said earlier about what science fiction films had been up until that point in time, which were very dystopian and very dark. And then to compare that to everything else that was being made in the 70s, including some amazingly good films, but to just see how it put together the different genres and the groundbreaking special effects and the idea of really what appeared to be a very well thought out universe where all kinds of things were happening in the background and just being alluded to, like, here's the Senate and that's important. Oh, and the Senate's been dissolved. And oh, there was a space over here. It's so much was going on in what really appeared to be a fully realized world. And watching it now, you can see even more of how that helped hook you in beyond just the characters, that there was this entire universe that Lucas had thought out, and he was just showing you this little bit of it, but oh my God, what else was going on that you don't see? And maybe we'll still tell that story someday too.
Wow.
Good call. Ashley, what about you?
I was going to say, I can't really say it any better than that. Your points are all spot on. Star Wars is my all-time favorite film franchise. I really don't foresee that changing. And you're right, when you do watch some of those older films, some of these special effects are maybe not as shiny or slick as the movies we see today. And there are some plot holes, there are some flaws, some changes that occur in the later movies where plot points don't add up anymore. But I think just based on sheer nostalgia, just like all of us, we just love this film. And it's a special memory of our childhood, and it's something that carries on to now. So even though, just like you said, it has its flaws, but we don't care. It's just this franchise that is just a part of our hearts and something that's very special to us. And when I watch the movies, I'm not just thinking of, like, as I watch A New Hope, I'm thinking of the future movies in the franchise, some of the TV shows, the books that I've read, all that supporting material, and that's all in the back of my mind as I watch the film. So it's just such a rich mythology, and exactly like you said, it's not perfect, had some good times, some bad times, but it really is just like a special franchise, and I'd argue there's really nothing else quite like it.
It's interesting to me whenever a Star Wars movie comes out now, which it looks like for the foreseeable future, we're going to get one a year at least. Everybody has to rank all their Star Wars movies. Like, okay, now I got to show everybody else what the order they're in now, because I've just seen this one. And it's interesting because New Hope, like, just keeps dropping. A lot of people do not pick it as their favorite, even though that for 90% of people, I would say it's their entry point. Alex, what about you?
I grow up with it and you see Empire and you see Jedi, and then in your 20s, you work at a video store where you're allowed to put on a movie every day, and we would throw Star Wars in, and, yes, there were things that you could absolutely make fun of. There's no easy way to tell if someone's a wimp or not, or whiny. Unless they're needing to go to Tashi Station for power converters, when Hamill says that line, it is so irritating that you're just like, how is he the one who saves the universe? but then later on, when I had a good friend and coworker named Steven. And Steven and I would riff on the movie. And one of our favorite scenes is when they go to Tarkin and they tell him, you know, we've assessed their attack. And we see that you know, they've got, you know, they're heading towards our weakness. Should we ready your ship for evacuation? And he goes, evacuate at our moment of triumph? I think you overestimate their chances. Both Steven and I at that point are like, so you're saying you don't want your spot in the escape ship. So it's open right now, is what you're saying.
Bye.
Cool. Bye. And then, you know, of course, you know, he sits there and goes, you may fire when ready, 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 ready. Because he's the only one in the ship. You know, hello. Anyway, and that was just stuff that we did. But it wasn't because we were hating on the movie. It's because we loved the movie even more. And that was, I think, one of the best things. It's certainly in my top five movies of all time, and it always will be. And it doesn't matter, you know, if the acting's not great. I mean, Harrison said it, George. You could write this, but you can't. But you can't say it. And it's tough to do. I mean, they were creating a universe. And it's a universe that has stood the test of time. And it's changed the way that Hollywood does movies, especially now. You know, you've got the Avengers universe now. You've got the Fast and the Furious universe now. You know, all these movies that are being made that at one point in time probably would have been standalone all by itself movies are now being thought over the long haul. So it's like, we're going to make three pictures out of this one storyline so we can, you know, extend this and make it a franchise. And that's what it is in Hollywood now. And Star Wars was really the catalyst for that.
Yeah. And some people blame Lucas for the change, but I think it would have happened eventually. It just happened.
Probably.
It happened to be the guy, right?
Yeah. But without Star Wars being a success, you probably would not have gotten the Star Trek movies.
I think you would have gotten them eventually. I mean, Star Trek was doing pretty well in syndication, and I think you would have. But, I mean, Star Wars...
I don't know that somebody would have sat there and said, okay, I feel good enough to put a lot of money off of a theatrical release. Maybe a return to television, but not a theatrical.
Absolutely. I mean, Star Wars opened the doorway for so much. And yes, I mean, I'm one of those that, you know, that definitely refers to Star Wars more as science fantasy than science fiction.
Fair enough.
But it's, you know, obviously the influence is there. Mike, what about you? Do you still rank it like at the top, or is it?
Of course, because it's in, like Alex was saying, it's influenced so much out there. And in some ways, it's lost a little bit of its luster. I think thank you to the prequels. I think it kind of tarnished the brand in some ways. But I think having the Clone Wars cartoons and then Rebels and now the new films, I think they've reestablished themselves. And I hate to say it, by giving George, you know, money and saying, hey, we're going to take over now. But you can put, you know, you can look at it from the outside almost. It's almost, you know, I think they needed to do that. I think that's how they needed to evolve. George had his vision, but you saw that in the prequels that it wasn't matching up with what society was really looking for anymore either. And I think that was part of the problem. Anytime Star Wars comes on, you know, if I'm like flipping channels and I see the original Star Wars, I'll stop at it. It'll be like, oh, I'm here. I'm watching no matter what. If it's the first 10 minutes or if it's the last 20 minutes, I will watch it all the way to the end. That's just a given. And it always will remain that way in my heart.
Yeah, there's definitely a nostalgia feel for a lot of us, right? I mean, it mm-hmm. takes us right back to our childhood and we're watching it like we did when we were 8, 9, 12, whatever, right? And so there's that part of it. But I think it also really just, I mean, what it tapped into then, I think it still is able to tap into. And like, you know, Alex pointed out, yeah, there's definitely some things that are just, you know, You kind of have to, like, when that stormtrooper bangs his head, now it's just amusing. You know, it's like, oh, he left it in. To Ashley's point, the only part, I usually, when I watch the original Star Wars movie, I usually can just forget about all the extended stuff and all the Clone Wars. Even though as much as I love some of that stuff, I can usually just sit there and enjoy it for what it is. There are a few things, of course, with the certainly, you know, the Luke and Leia stuff is a little bit weird to watch now because, you know, it's like they're brother and sister and it's like, ew. mostly I think it holds up. And I'm very defensive of Star Wars. When things come along, even within the Star Wars films, like Rogue One kind of approaches, like, to me, and that's when we talked about Rogue One, I was kind of like, oh, this is kind of, you know, breaching in on how special Star Wars is to me. And I kind of didn't like that aspect of what Rogue One was doing. So I know for a lot of people it led right in and it was a marvelous thing. But for me, I had the opposite reaction. But for the most part, I will always pick Star Wars as my favorite Star Wars movie. And that sounds really simple to say, even though a lot of people, I know that some movies were done better. Some movies are directed better. Some movies have better special effects. Some have better characters in them. But to me, like, the first one is just so powerful. I think anybody, just like in 1977, anybody can watch it at any time and it clicks. It absolutely clicks with them. And I'm not sure any of the others are capable of that.
Mm, exactly. And that's cool. And we have so many franchises now that we have to thank because of the original Star Wars and George Lucas. You know, you had
place blame, you know, it depends on
well,
your
no, I was thinking Farscape or, you know, Babylon 5 or even
Battlestar Galactica.
Extremely so because, you know, yeah. The original, it felt like, you know, when the original Battlestar Galactica movie came out, you got, you know, right there, you felt that, you know, you had Star Wars to thank from it. You had when Flash Gordon came back.
I think Battlestar Galactica was Lucas's first lawsuit.
I think so, too.
I think it has that special place.
But you had Flash Gordon, you had Buck Rogers coming back, you had all these space adventures come back because of Star Wars.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you have, you know, 40 years and, you know, it's going strong. Who would have thought it? You know, who would have thought when you were 8 years old, 9 years old, seeing it in the theaters, 40 years from now, you'll be seeing brand new Star Wars adventures. It's just amazing.
Still, you know, with everything that's happened and whatever I feel about, you know, certainly the other movies or whatever, when that, you know, those words appear on the screen and it says a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And then the next thing is a blast of orchestra with a star field and those words, Star Wars, hit the screen. I get chills. Even thinking about it right now, I'm getting chills because it just is so powerful.
Heck, every time I heard the 20th century, you know, opening, no matter what movie it was, I would expect to see
that's
a long
time
ago.
That's gone now. But
now you have that stupid Disney thing. Yeah,
Mike, you mentioned the fanfare. I will never forget the time we had HBO on, and I heard the, you know, bum 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 bum. Dum bum, you know, and I'm like, oh, cool, Star Wars is coming on, and it, you know, did the whole thing, and then it was Star Wars, and I was like, this is awesome, because I had no idea that HBO was going to show it. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I don't even remember what my plans were for that day, but I was watching this movie. But that fanfare at the beginning of any film, you automatically just go ahead and assume, oh yeah, Star Wars, here it comes. When they did the marathon for May the 4th weekend, Empire and Jedi didn't have it, and it made me sad.
Wow, they took it out.
They've taken it out.
Did any of you guys growing up have the Star Wars album, which was the whole audio of the movie.
No.
Yeah, it even had the fanfare on that.
Oh, uh-huh.
That would have been nice.
Yeah,
it was awesome. My dad at the time was working at a record store, and he was managing it, and he knew I was into the Star Wars stuff, and he was like, "Okay, look what I brought you home." It was like, and it was just awesome. I put grooves into that record.
My parents would have eventually destroyed it.
I had the 45 RPM read along.
Oh, awesome.
Where it would do R2's would tell you when it was time to turn the page.
Yeah, I remember that.
Somebody want to explain to Ashley what a record is?
I know what records are.
Vinyl's like a vinyl CD. Vinyl's back, man.
I actually have a record player. So
see, there you go. And you probably don't.
I do actually.
No, I mean Alex doesn't.
No, I don't. I put everything on MP3s. So.
And something we haven't really touched on, but I wanted to mention real quick, is like speaking of albums, like just the music for this movie is just fantastic. Like John Williams, this is some of the most iconic movie music I think that has ever been written or will ever be written, just from the opening. Like you said, the swelling of the orchestra, you just immediately know it's Star Wars, and then Darth Vader's theme, like the Force theme, the throne room scene at the end where they're getting their awards, just the music, I think, kicks this movie up a whole nother level. It's just such great music and really makes the movie what it is.
I really appreciate that he gave, you know, every character, really, every major character, their own theme. And so that, you know, I mean, just think about it. I mean, that's not really done these days, but I mean, he made it really an art form, so much so that at Celebration, when he came out and played the Princess Leia theme in honor of Carrie Fisher, I mean, that was like a perfect tribute. You know, certain movie characters and iconic people who play, like, you know, like Chris Pratt's not going to be able to get that for, you know, Star-Lord, because there's no Star-Lord theme, you know? So what are they going to play when Chris Pratt dies? I don't know.
Yeah. When John and as a tribute,
what's the matter?
Yeah,
as a piece of evidence to that, when John Williams came out and performed, obviously it was another surprise at Celebration that nobody knew was going to happen, and then all of a sudden there he was. I unfortunately was not in the room when that happened. I was on the show floor, and thanks to the Star Wars show for feeding that into the dealer's room, basically. But when that happened and he came out, there was an explosion of applause. And it wasn't just from people in the room. It was people who were there, getting the opportunity to see John Williams perform his piece for Star Wars, and it was absolutely unbelievable. But the standing ovation that he got, and you can watch it on the videos, you can watch it on YouTube, the standing ovation he got lasts just as long as the one for Lucas.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. I have had the honor of hearing John Williams conduct the Star Wars theme twice, and ooh, that is powerful. I mean, as powerful as I was just saying as it is in the theater, with the best sound system, to hear it live with an orchestra is just, I mean, it just makes me melt.
Mm-hmm. It's just a legend.
Yeah. Well, there's no such thing, I think, as a bad John Williams score, whereas George Lucas did make Howard the Duck. So, you know, you're always going to have that. You're going to need that applause is always going to need to be as long.
George said that in 20 years, people will find that Howard the Duck was a genius movie. Yeah. So he was wrong then too, but
wow. We can actually go on for hours, cause we haven't even gotten into, you know, so much with Star Wars, this could almost become a whole series. But
it's just a continuation of the conversation I've been having for 40 years.
Yeah. Exactly.
Now so it's recorded it.
Exactly. And it's just interesting because, you know, for me, you know, I know we got to start wrapping this up, you know, time-wise. But, you know, even someone like William, who's now 17, and not much younger than Ashley. So that you know, he got into Star Wars, you know, from a very young age. He was probably 4 or 5 when he first saw Star Wars. And, you know, I showed it to him on disc, you know, the discs we had. And I thought, oh, I'll give it a shot. And he fell in love with it right away. And, you know, yeah, his first seeing Star Wars at the theater was Episode 3, you know, to be able to see it. And it was just to have,
saw,
you know,
4 first.
Oh, of course. He saw, you know, he had seen in, you know, on disc, he saw 4, 5, 6, and then 1 and 2, and then he saw 3 at the theaters.
I you know, I don't care how many prequels that they make, because it seems like there's no end to them now. But I think everybody needs to start with Episode 4, because that works.
Yeah.
That's a proven fact that works.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, of course, you know, we want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us esopodcast@gmail.com. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with the Con Report.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this geek girl is talking about the first season of Riverdale. Now, I did an episode after Riverdale premiered, and now that the show has finished its first season, and wow, what a season that was, I was a bit skeptical about the series at first, since a gritty Archie series to me didn't seem like something good, but boy, was I wrong. Now, I'm not going to spoil the first series for you. I'm basically going to gush about the awesome casting choices and other cool things that are in this season without spoiling it for you, because it should be up on Netflix soon, and if you haven't watched it yet, you should go watch it the second it goes up. First off, I love the casting choices for all of the characters. The actors fell into their parts well, and while I'm still a bit iffy on how much attitude the Pussycats seem to have, they did seem to be a little bit more likable to me towards the end of the season. Also, the character of Cheryl Blossom, holy crap, she is amazing and the perfect bad girl. Like, I felt so many different emotions for her throughout the entire series, and that really shows some great writing on the people that write the show and on the actress herself for portraying her like that. I also loved how after all season, we finally got to see Jughead eat a hamburger. It was about time. Also, that season ending, yeah, it shocked me, and I'm ready for season 2 now. I want to see what happens. I'm not going to say anything, but you're definitely going to have to watch it and find out. So, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report.
Con! Well, this weekend on Saturday at the My Parents' Basement is the Bizarre Bazaar. I'm trying to pronounce it Bizarre, if you want to call it that. It was originally scheduled for last weekend, but due to rain, since it is an outdoor event, it was rescheduled to this Saturday, the 27th of May. So I know it's only a few days that you guys are listening to this away. So if you can make it out, I will be there with Tiki Zombie artist Peter Cutler. We'll be selling issues of Tiki Zombie for sure. Peter will be doing sketches, and I'm going to be bringing a lot of items from my personal collection to move. I need to. I'm doing some spring cleaning. I have home repairs I need to pay for, so I am pricing everything to move. I've got trades, a bunch of comic trades, $2. I've got a bunch of DVDs that I'm selling for $2 a piece, action figures and whatnot. So there's going to be a lot of stuff at my area, so I hope that you'll stop by. And I believe it's noon to 5 o'clock on Saturday, but you can find out all the information by going to My Parents' Basement. I think they have an event page on Facebook, but you can look them up on online as well, or I'll be posting information about it too. So if you follow me on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, you can get all the information there. So, and if I have any items left over, I will be posting those online as well. So if you are interested in getting some cheap entertainment, some good entertainment, man, you'll be surprised at some of the stuff I'm getting rid of. I will probably, if there's anything left over, I will post about it on the social media too. And if you are interested and are willing to help out with shipping, we will make some deals. So, okay, so enough of my endless plugging, shameless plugging. So apart from that, also this weekend is an amazement at in Raleigh, North Carolina. That is a convention that's focused on anime. It is, and our geek girl herself, Angela Pritchett, is going to be attending that one. So say howdy to her there, and she'll play a tune on her ukulele. Then on June 2nd through 4th is Con Carolinas in Charlotte, North Carolina. Really nice show. I've been there a couple times. Angela Pritchett will be there. Some friends of the station are going to be there, too. I do know that the award-winning Bobby Nash is scheduled to attend that one, as well as friend of the station John Hartness. A lot of writers. It's a good writers' convention, Con Carolinas.
You name a con, Angela will be there.
Yeah, Angela's going to be at a lot of cons. But she's not going to be at the one on June 10th. And 11th, unfortunately, but you will find Mike, myself, and Earth Station Who and Earth Station MCU host Jennifer Hartshorn. She will be at that event, as well as Terminus podcast host Nicole will be at Con Castaburus in Huntsville, Alabama. There's going to be a doctor in the house, I believe. Peter Davison is the one that's selected. This is regenerating for this con, correct?
Yes, sir. And, Dr. Five himself.
Lots of other cool guests as well. It's a really great con. We're really looking forward to it. We're still kind of feeling the afterglow from Hulanta. So Con Castaburus is a good way to sort of pick me up. And it's a good chaser, right? For the Hulanta shot, the Con Castaburus is a good chaser for that. So definitely encourage everybody to come on out. We're going to be recording some panels out there. And we'll probably have some pretty exciting guests on those panels. So even if you can't make it out, we're going to try to bring the con to you to play some of the panels afterwards. Yeah, it's a great show. So if you are anywhere near the Huntsville, Alabama area, come on down and see us and say howdy. The only other show that I can think of in June is June 30th and July 2nd. That is LibertyCon in Chattanooga. Great town. Van Allen Plexico from the White Rocket Network of podcasts. It's a network within a network within a network within a network. It's like sort of a Christopher Nolan kind of thing that goes on there. But anyway, Van's got some new books that are coming out, and he's always great to see on panel. So go on out and see him at LibertyCon. And then July 2nd, that same weekend, is the Atlanta Comic Convention. It's a one-day show. It's at the Marriott Century Center, our con home away from home that we like to go to. Unfortunately, I will be elsewhere that weekend, so I will not be able to attend. But you'll be able to find Mike Faber wandering around looking for – he'll probably be close to the Funko Pop figures, or I've noticed that you even go through the trades.
I love the trades. I trade the trades. I love them.
You like the trades that make the whole world sing?
Oh, God, yes. But at least we've gotten William away from Mark Ballard's spinning wheel. So
that's right. So a lot of good friends of the station hang out there. It's a good – not only is it a good convention to go look around and see new independent comic folks, because they litter the halls. But you can also find good deals with a lot of vendors there. And it's a great place to just go hang out and chat with people. We see a lot of friends of the station there. So it's a great place to show up. And if you're going to be there or at any other con, please reach out to us and let us know ahead of time so we can look for you, meet up, say howdy. You know, if you've got any requests about this funny show that we do, please let us know. We'd love to chat with listeners in person. We also love talking about conventions. So if you've got a con that you want us to help promote or participate in, because we love organizing panels, participating, taking part in panels, please, please reach out to us because cons are our thing, man. We love it.
Hi, this is Michelle with the iconic Rock Talk Show moment. Chris Cornell was laid to rest Friday, May 26th in L.A. at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery in a private ceremony that, as you would expect, was attended by what seems like most of the music community, including members of Foo Fighters, Metallica, Chris Novoselic, Perry Farrell, and Dave Navarro, and others. A lot of music from his career was played during the ceremony, including Audioslave's Like a Stone, his solo song The Promise, and it finished up with Temple of the Dog's All Night Thing. There were several eulogies. Kim Thayil and Matt Cameron from Soundgarden gave them, and Tom Morello from Audioslave, who described Cornell as melodic as the Beatles, as heavy as Sabbath, and as haunting as Edgar Allan Poe. After the ceremony, fans were welcome to visit the gravesite, which is located next to the one for his idol and friend Johnny Ramone. And they say there will be a public memorial at a future date. Cornell's widow, Vicky, has publicly said she believes that the drug Ativan played a role in what happened. And we can't know if that's true, but we do know that this is a prescription drug that's highly addictive, a lot of potential for abuse. So it never hurts to have this information. If you or someone you know is having issues with any substance and needs help, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, SAMHSA, has a free 24/7 365 hotline to get you in touch with what you need. The number is 1-800-662-HELP. If you were trying to watch the CNN soundtrack series that we talked about here in April, you've probably been pretty frustrated because they got to episode 3, preempted it twice for news events, and then they never put it back on the schedule. It's recently been announced that it will return to the schedule on Fridays at 10, starting this Friday, June 2nd. And it looks like they're going to start up again with episode 3, but it's likely they'll rerun the first two at some point. If you've missed it so far and want to get started, this is a series produced by Dwayne Johnson looking at significant events in recent history through the music of the time. To learn more about it, you can go to cnnsoundtracks.com. Dexter Holland of Offspring recently finished his PhD in molecular biology, publishing a 175-page dissertation relating to the HIV virus. He said that he wants to contribute to the knowledge available in the field because more than 1 million people worldwide die of HIV complications every year. There's 2 million new infections every year, and almost 37 million people are living with the virus. We tend to think it's not a problem anymore, but it very much is. He plans to keep working in the field and publishing more papers, but right after he graduated from USC earlier in May, he immediately hit the road with Offspring on a really extensive world tour, and he says they'll be recording some new material when they get a chance. I don't know of any other rock stars with academic PhDs. There's some honoraries out there. But of course, there's Brian May of Queen, and speaking of Dr. May, he has published another book. No, I don't get paid for shilling Queen merchandise. I wish I did. This one is called Queen in 3D, because Brian's been an avid photographer all his life. He's a big fan and collector of 3D photography. This is actually his third book on the topic. As you might guess, the book is pictures of Queen. It goes starts from way back in the day, and it says it goes up to the present time, so there could be the added thrill of a 3D picture of Adam Lambert in a tiara. You never know. It comes with its own little viewer to see the pictures in 3D. There's an unboxing video hosted by Brian May on YouTube if you want to see it in action. And here's the plug. You can order it for its U.S. release in August at the Amazon link at the ESO webpage. And if you're in UK or the UK or Europe, it's out right now. Brian May's PhD is in astronomy, and on the topic of astronomy, see what I did there? Lars Ulrich of Metallica says they would love to be the first band to play in space and that they have feelers out to see if doing that would ever be a possibility. A few years ago, they set a record. They were the first band to play all seven continents in a year. They wrapped up by being the first band ever to play Antarctica, so space is their final frontier. And I know there's some people out there who'd be happy to blast Lars Ulrich into space. And finally, Captain Underpants hits theaters Friday, June 2nd. Tra-la-la! And I know your first question is, well, who did the theme song? Well, Weird Al, Of course, it's perfect. Check out the video online, YouTube, and other sites while you wait for the movie to come out. And I gotta say, some of the reader threads on the online stories have been very educational on the topic of men's underwear. And I'll leave you with that image. This has been the Iconic Rock Talk Show moment. Check out the blog at iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. Let's thank our guests for joining us. Alex, thank you, sir.
It is an absolute pleasure to get the opportunity to once again talk with y'all and to talk about one of the greatest movies ever made.
Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
Yeah, serious note. Right before we started recording, we heard about Zack Snyder's announcement that he has left Justice League to be with his family. Our thoughts go with him. The National Suicide Prevention Hotline, 1-800-273-8255.
Yeah, we talked about suicide recently on the last Dragon Con report with Michelle Bittick-Simmons, and it happens way too much in our community and just in life in general. You know, please, if you have any thoughts of taking your life or ending it or whatever, don't do it. Do not do it. There's always some reason to live, and things will get better. Just remember
that. And we love
you. Yep, exactly. Somebody loves you in this world, you know, and, you know, the sun comes up every day. Every day is a new day. Just remember that. You know, the darkness will go away, and if it gets too bad for you, please call that phone number that Alex gave. You know, and we will have that up in our show notes. Please, please, please. Ashley, thank you, ma'am.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's always fun to talk about stuff, and I always love an excuse to talk about Star Wars.
Well, what is your email? Jedi One or something like that?
Yeah, Jedi Ash. So, yeah.
Yeah,
I love Star Wars just a little bit.
Yeah, so it was almost a given to have you on tonight. And Jim, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for the chance to come back. It's always great to come up to the station and talk about something we all have in common, we all enjoy, especially when it's Star Wars. And hopefully I'll make it back some other time with a bit fewer audio difficulties.
Audio difficulties? I don't know what you're talking about.
These are not the audio difficulties you're looking for. Move along.
Exactly. Move along. Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
The one thing I'll say is, you know, we're all pretty different people. Everyone out there listening to the podcast is, but we all, you know, came together for a shared love of nerdery, Star Wars today. So, you know, remember that when all of us are looking at things in the headlines and the news, that there's still so much more that we have in common that brings us together, and the things that we argue and fight about, you know, and take the time to listen to what the other guy's got to say. Unless what they're saying is that Batman and Robin is a good film. That's unacceptable. That cannot be said. Don't accept that. But anything else, listen to what the other guy's got to say.
Okay. Ashley, I forgot to let you have a shout out. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to mention that I'm keeping on blogging my way through the summer movies, and got my review up for Alien Covenant. And then next week we'll be taking a look at the new Pirates movie. So curious to see how that turns out.
Awesome.
Yo-ho.
Yo-ho. And Mr. Mike, thank you, sir.
As always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
Well, speaking of Alien Covenant, you can hear all about what I thought of the movie, as well as good friends Phantom Troublemaker and Ryan Cadaver on the next episode of Needless Things podcast, the 162. That'll be out about the same time this one is, actually. And so, yeah, we talk all about Alien Covenant. And Ashley, I read your review, and we are pretty much on the same page on this one. So I'm not going to go through any spoilers here. But, yeah, if you want to hear all about it, you can listen to us rant and rave about it on Needless Things.
Most excellent, sir. Most excellent. All right. A couple different things I want to shout out about. Thank you, everyone, for your patience. I know you're going, what happened to last week's episode? I'm still wondering that myself. We recorded an amazing episode last week about aliens and the whole franchise, and we recorded it, had all the different segments ready. It was a lot of fun, and my hard drive on my computer crashed. So basically, we're trying to recover it, and hopefully future date, that whole episode will be released. So you'll see an episode come out of order. So sorry about that. We're going to continue with the episode orders and just keep on going with all that. And I think it'll just be a ton of fun.
We're
going
to keep on trucking, Mike?
Of course. Yeah, I thank you for my Grateful Dead reference. I love it. Of course, I really do appreciate that. Also, for friends out there in the Atlanta area, every summer here in Atlanta, the Fox Theater does a movie series, and it's on Saturdays usually, and we've gone in the past to go see Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein. Thank you. We've seen Grease sing along. We've seen The Fiddler on the Roof sing along. We've gone to see, all different ones, you know, that they've done, like Sound of Music. But this year, they are doing a Mary Poppins sing along on July 23rd.
Sorry, I'm thinking of coming to the galaxy now.
Of course. I'm Mary Poppins, boy. For fans of Harry Potter, on August 5th, August 12th, and August 13th, they are doing the whole series of Harry Potter films. So that should be actually really cool to go see it on the giant screen again with a bunch of Potterheads. It's actually a lot of fun. And the Fox Theater, if you've never been, is just a beautiful venue to see.
I've seen movies there. You're right. It's absolutely. They do a little organ thing at the beginning, and it's just really fun, and it's a gorgeous theater.
Mm-hmm. Do not talk about that little organ thing. That's, very sensitive. But it's amazing.
There are pills for that, Alex.
Yeah, but after 4 hours, you got to contact the doctor.
So we definitely, definitely would recommend going to see it, and you could find just look up Fox Theater Atlanta Summer Film Festival, and there's even other stuff that I didn't mention that's, very worth going to see. So definitely please go take a peek at it. That is going to wrap up our episode for tonight, and we are going to be back next week. But until then, my name is Mike Faber, and, as we always like to say, please write us esopodcast@gmail.com, or if you want to call us, please 404-963-9057. And, if we like what you say, we'll play it up on the air. That's it for this week. I'm out of here. Talk to you soon. Peace. And we are done.
And the Force will be with you always.
Hot Star Wars. Nothing but Star Wars. Give me those Star Wars. Don't let them end. If they should bar wars, please let these Star Wars stay. And hey, how about that nutty Star Wars bar? Can you forget all the creatures in there? And hey, Darth Vader in that black and evil mask, did he scare you as much as he scared me? Ah! Star Wars! Those here in Star Wars, my seventh winner up here, Star Wars!
You've been listening to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon.com e-store, where right from our website you can find all kind of geeky goodness. And if you get something up there, you also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is ESOpodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.